Chapter 47 Criticisms. Strangely enough, we ask for material theories in support of spiritual and eternal truths, when the two are so antagonistic that the material thought must become spiritualized before the spiritual fact is attained. Mary Baker Eddy, 1885. 19th century New England produced America's great literature. This era and locale also produced the literary scholar, who filled a most important position in the best publishing houses, that of proofreader. Authors of renown could frequently be found in the proofreader's office, consulting with him on one point or another, asking and receiving advice. Science and health was brought forth with no such aid from the literary scholars. The proofreading for the first and second editions, if there had been any at all, was atrocious. Beginning with the third edition, and Mrs. Eddy's association with John Wilson, typographical and orthographical errors were virtually eliminated. However, for lack of funds and time, Mrs. Eddy had not been able to avail herself of any literary assistance whatsoever. Early in 1885, her book was in its 13th edition, three of which had been revisions. Before its 10th anniversary in the fall, she would have revised it once more. Her babe was performing its mission, blessing and healing mankind. But the mother was ever improving and perfecting her work, and she could now afford the services of an English scholar. Mrs. Eddy was wise enough to appreciate the talents of the thorough scholar, but the literary assistance was to her a secondary consideration. Students and patients who had experienced healing accepted and embraced science and health joyously, but the author wanted a truly lucid textbook for the total stranger, and for all time to come. Thus, when she employed James Henry Wigan, it was for the purpose of criticizing her new revision to help her in simplifying and clarifying her presentation. At the time he started his task, Reverend Wigan was not the only critical reader of Science and Health. A young woman from Nebraska, Miss C. Lulu Blackman, who was facing inevitable invalidism, had traveled to Chicago and been healed by Miss Ellen Brown. Sometime later, she applied to Mrs. Eddy for instruction in an abrupt letter in which she stated, quote, "If it is necessary for me to be a dissatisfied and miserable Christian, I am not ready for this instruction," end quote. Mrs. Eddy answered simply, "Come and see." After the class, the teacher wrote to Miss Brown, "Miss Blackman, you had described to me briefly in a letter, but I had forgotten your words. Until in the class I found myself beating furiously against certain traits, and in an instant recognized that they were the ones you alluded to, with the hope that I should exterminate them." Well, dear, she went out very much advanced from what she came in. Miss Blackman had been saved from the tempter, the willpower of the human mind, in an interesting experience. Following the third lesson, Mrs. Eddy had said, quote, "Now go home and take your first patient," End quote. This student's first intent was to escape the assignment, which was followed by such temptation as she, quote, had never before known, end quote. As she recalled, in my own estimation, I was not ready to take a patient. It was a great relief to remember that I was a complete stranger in Boston, and so could not possibly be called upon to give a treatment. Not willful disobedience, but stress of circumstances would exempt me. When I opened the door of my rooming place, a member of the family was found to be very ill. When he saw that I was making haste to escape to my room, he called to me, quote, "If you can do anything for me, why don't you do it?" Suggestions taking form in words declared that I did not know enough of the Christian Science method to use it, and declared that there was a power in my own mind that I could use instead. Error pleaded with me to substitute mortal mind for immortal mind, arguing that mortal mind was my natural habitat, and that immortal mind was too transcendental to avail. I had been precipitated into a seeming mental realm where the supposititious forces of evil sought to establish the claim to equal or transcend the power of God. I realized that there was a greater question here than that of mere physical healing. The decision to rely upon divine mind alone was made, and I answered the tempter, quote, "I will not resort to willpower, even if the young man dies," end quote. Then, as a ministering angel, this scriptural verse came to me, quote, "Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground," end quote. I had forgotten the patient, but as I turned to leave the room, I saw he was sleeping peacefully and that complete healing had taken place. On the closing day of the class, Mrs. Eddy spoke to each member individually as she bade him goodbye. Holding Miss Blackman's hand, she looked directly into her eyes and said, quote, "Thou art mine, saith the Lord, and none shall pluck you from out of my hand," end quote. Not all the critical and skeptical members of that class were redeemed from the error that beset them. Mrs. Mary H. Plunkett from Detroit had written of her dramatic healing in Christian Science for the journal. Shortly thereafter, she applied to Mrs. Eddy for instruction, but she did not disclose the fact that she studied first with A. J. Swartz. Quote, "There is nothing hidden that shall not be revealed," end quote. And Mrs. Plunkett did not deceive Mrs. Eddy for long, if at all. When the teacher entered the classroom on opening day, September 14th, all the members rose spontaneously. When she reached her slightly raised platform, she turned and looked searchingly into the face of the first student in the first row. Speaking no word, she proceeded to the next student silently, knocking at the door of his consciousness, perceiving his response, and giving a benediction. After the individual mental examination of each member, she raised her eyes in prayer, and all repeated the Lord's Prayer with one accord. Then everyone was seated, and the teaching commenced. Before long, Mrs. Plunkett's antagonism was brought to the surface, but she subtly endeavored to draw the members of the class away from Mrs. Eddy and to herself. She appealed particularly to a pretty woman from the Midwest, but lovely, sweet Mrs. Laura Lathrop resisted these advances. Alas, however, another student fell victim to her wiles. In the current issue of the journal, September 1885, Mrs. Hopkins had warned against false teachers, then added of those who were certificated. No student, I speak from knowledge of facts, has ever yet been qualified to teach Christian Science, except rudimentarily. They are not to blame for this. They must wait and grow to their strength through suffering and watchful prayer. But she whose life of cleansing sorrow left her the fit transparency for revelations straight from the infinite source teaches the science of God and His creations in all its divine completeness. No member of a class of the college ever left till he had ascended the full height of his understanding, borne thither by the strong pinions of our leader's inspiration. It rests then wholly with himself whether he keeps forever in view that revelation, and conscientiously strives to make it the end of all attainment. For this he alone is responsible. He cannot deny that he has caught the full meaning of prophecy and revelation, and been shown the way to God's saving presence. How great, then, the folly of falling back to earthly ambitions and earthly ends, by claiming to work the same miracle for the pottage reward of a little publicity and a few $100. The heavens had opened unto Emma Hopkins, and she had heard the voice from heaven saying, quote, "This is my beloved daughter, in whom I am well pleased," end quote. And immediately she was led into the wilderness and tempted of the devil. Mrs. Hopkins had not been in the class to see Mrs. Plunkett's open defiance of Mrs. Eddy before its close, but she was subjected to her subtle conversations, and she failed to resist the temptations the adversary placed before her. When Mrs. Eddy relieved her of the editorship in October, she proclaimed her loyalty, but her actions belied her words. Very soon she joined forces with Mrs. Plunkett and began the very type of teaching she had so recently condemned. Her criticisms of her beloved teacher were bitter as she assisted Mrs. Plunkett in endeavoring to usurp Mrs. Eddy's position. It would appear that Mrs. Eddy had another Judas in the person of Mary Plunkett, who, it was later learned, was a cousin of Richard Kennedy. But she also had a reason for rejoicing, for in the same class, she had found a Peter.